Welcome, Mindful Multifamily viewers and listeners. I'm super excited to have Neil Bawa on the show. You're about to gain a wealth of knowledge. Before we get started, take 5 minutes, set aside, hop on Facebook, and join the Mindful Multifamily Network, where you can network alongside myself, Neil, and other Mindful Multifamily guests. Neil, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on the show, Chris. Very excited to be here.
Yes, I've heard you speak at multiple events and very excited to have you on here because you are a technologist. Everyone knows you as the mad scientist of multifamily. Yep. That's if you don't follow Neil on social media, at the very end of this, he'll give you the social media to follow him because he pours out a wonderful amount of numbers, wonderful amount of information when it comes to multifamily. And I follow him and I learn so much from him. Besides that, you've grown a real estate portfolio of over $250 million of multifamily. You're also known as a data guru, processing freak, and you're an outsourcing expert, which I'm super excited to get into because a lot of people, the number one difficulty is time management and managing your time. And you know how to do that by outsourcing that with the little things so you can focus on your main big goals. So let's just jump straight into things. Who opened your eyes to real estate and especially multifamily real estate?
Well, unlike most people, you know, that where family buys real estate and then they kind of follow them in there. In my case, I did this in reverse. And the person that opened my eyes to real estate was the CEO of my technology company. I was the chief operations officer. We were running the company together. We'd been doing it for more than a dozen years at that time. And he said, I don't want to be a tenant anymore. I want to be my own landlord. And I'm going to build a custom campus. And this was 2003 for our own uses. And it's going to be built from scratch. And what I didn't realize was that when he said, I'm going to build it, what he really meant was we are going to build it. And so once I realized that, I was like, Paul, are you crazy? I mean, I'm a technologist. You're a technologist. What the heck are we doing building campuses, right? Let's just get a contractor and build it. He's like, no. You don't understand. This is incredible value. There's so much that we're going to learn here and so much money that we're going to save. And we did end up saving, thanks to his incredible knowledge and his mentorship of me, millions of dollars as we built that first campus. And then we ended up building or partially building 6 different campuses, custom use for our business. And they really catapulted our business and were a very big part of us successfully exiting that business in 2013 at class leading valuations that, you know, people hadn't seen in our industry before. So, I realized that real estate actually by itself might be a great career, but it was also phenomenally powerful for any business that had nothing to do with technology, but was incredibly powerful for that as well. Because we got to the point where instead of paying rent to other people, we were paying rent to ourselves. So our company's assets were going up. Our company's profits were going up just as a tenant-landlord relationship that we had built inside of the company. So that was an unusual way to get started, but it was extraordinarily powerful.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. So you are, you do a lot, just looking at your portfolio, you've been involved in brand new development of residential, brand new development of multifamily, anywhere from C, B, value add assets, and also student housing as well. Let's talk about the development stage, the student housing and multifamily in general. And I want to chat with COVID a little bit. And I know we chatted before this because everyone is everywhere when it comes to COVID. They don't know what to do. People are sitting on the sidelines. People are actively searching. Let's talk about multifamily and where you're seeing it going in COVID and what's going to happen to it.
So obviously in the short run, I think the honest answer, the only honest answer I can give you is that I feel like there's a lot of fog around. And to be honest, that fog had lifted from mid-May to mid-July or early July, had sort of lifted. We had a way forward. The U.S. was down from, you know, peak of 35, 40,000 cases to 18,000 cases. And it felt like we had either plateaued or gone down. Our death rate was down. It felt like we had managed this well. And now we had to basically go back to work. And maybe there was something that's going to happen in the fall. But now that doesn't seem to be the case. At this point, we've got, you know, a good portion of the United States ready for either a second shutdown or a partial shutdown. So what, the honest answer I can give you, Chris, is it's a day-by-day process. What I've learned through COVID is this is one of those crises that is like a war. You can win a battle, but then there's another front's going to open up and you're going to fight that battle and you might win that one or you might lose that one. And that doesn't mean that you won't win the war in the long run. I'm sure we will, because this is not, you know, this virus is not as devastating as some of the ones that humanity has faced in the past, especially, you know, stuff like the bubonic plague. So there's a way to beat it. We already know what it is, but it takes time. It takes effort. And that is affecting the economic cycle in many different ways. You know, we've seen huge impact already on hotels, huge impact on retail. We've seen variable impact on student housing. So early on, student housing had huge impact as people basically walked away, students walked away. But then we also started hearing that for the fall semester, universities are not opening their internal dorms because of issues with legalities. And so what they're saying is, well, if you had 1,000 student dorm, we're going to only let 300 students in. Well, the remaining 700, if they want to come back to the college, they have to go into student housing. Yeah. So now there's some positive news coming out about student housing. But the honest answer is we won't know what's going to happen to student housing for this year for the next 45 days. By the end of 45 days, we'll have a very good picture of student housing, because student housing, pretty much all the enrollment is done by the end of August. Right? So we'll have a good idea where that area is going to be. Multifamily is a little more vague. So far, I think we can pat ourselves on the back as being phenomenal. You know, the last 3 months, April, May, June, and July so far have been absolutely phenomenal for multifamily. When you consider that you're in the middle of a pandemic, when you consider that we're in, 13, 14% unemployment rates, all you can do is celebrate the success.
Oh yeah.
But I think that it's too early. I think that at this point of time, if I make a judgment today, I think that that judgment is a little bit early. Why? Because we have a lot of things happening in the next 15 to 30 days. Number one, we have, the eviction moratoriums ending. Number two, we've got unemployment, the $600 a week unemployment, that comes to an end at the end of July or some part of August. The impact of PPP, remember, people were paid, employers were paid to keep employees on the payroll, and that time frame where they had to keep them on payroll is coming to an end. EIDL loans are slowing down. So there's a lot of things which kind of are creating a perfect storm in August, and making it worse is this, what some people call the second wave of COVID, and I call the continuation of the first wave. Where you've got Texas, Florida, Arizona in serious trouble and California in somewhat of trouble with potentially needing to shut down. So you bring all of those things together, and the answer is it's really hard to tell where we are going to be with multifamily in 3 to 6 months. I do believe that we're going to have some levels of shutdowns, but not anywhere close to what we are used to in the past, mm-hmm. In March or April. So bottom line is, in the short term, we've got a murky outlook for multifamily, but it's not catastrophic. I don't think that there's a lot of multifamily operators going out of business. We have seen prices fall. We've seen a 4 to 5% decline in prices. So far, we've seen no decline in cap rates. The price of multifamily has two components, the net operating income of the property multiplied by a certain cap rate. We haven't seen any changes in cap rates. And it's very unlikely that we will see changes in cap rates. Why? Because we just injected $4 trillion into the US economy and almost $10 trillion into the world economy. And when you inject such a massive amount of money into the world economy, that usually compresses cap rates for all assets that are cash flowing, all assets that produce income. It has a compression effect. So that $10 trillion is fighting any cap rate increase that you might be seeing in the marketplace. So we're seeing it being flat. Most people will tell you it's going to stay flat. In the long run, compress again because of these $4 trillion. But I'm talking now about 2 years from now. But in the next 2 years, I don't see much happening with cap rates. Net operating income, though, is going down. We are seeing properties where we had to do concessions. We're seeing properties that planned on raising rents by 3% this year that are actually cutting rents by 0.5%. Wow. So we're seeing some impacts, and as a result of that, our net operating income across the board in the U.S. is down a little bit, a tad bit, a small bit. It's not really going to impact the stability of our properties, but it's going to impact the money in investors' pockets. And net operating income is used to calculate the price of the property, so there's a decline there. So 4 to 5% is what we're seeing. I expect that number to slowly tick up to 10% at some point late in the fall, maybe end of Q3, even Q4, we might see a 10% price reduction compared to Feb. Q1 might stay at that 10%, but then I believe prices will start to pick back up, because I think by Q1, either we'll have a vaccine or we'll have positive announcements about a vaccine. Consumer sentiment will go up. People will start to basically spend again, and we should start to see prices going back up. So we see what most people are calling a short to midterm opportunity in the market for multifamily to buy, but no crash of any kind.
Yeah, very well said. And I think I definitely agree with that. I definitely see it happening next year. My opinion, I see it being a square root symbol, but with the line of the square root, it's going to be up more, because that little spike is going to be people wanting to get back out, getting out of their house, ordering fast food and takeout. So you're going to see that little spike, and then it's going to slowly come up, but it's going to take some time. You know, like you said, it's going to take 2 to 3 years for some time to see it recap. One thing I love to talk, I want to talk about, is that your portfolio is so diverse, and focusing on new construction right now, what are you seeing in the market with COVID impacting new construction at all compared to a B value add asset?
It's certainly more risky than it was in February. So there's no doubt about that. What we are seeing, though, is that for syndicators that are well-capitalized, have raised a significant amount of equity, they still have options. So unlike a lot of new construction, I have never gone the route of doing what is known as mezzanine loans, where you raise 10% of equity, then 20% of mezzanine, and then the last 70% is the big loan. Mm-hmm. I've never done that. We've always raised 25% to 30% of equity, and that's standing us in good stead. Because what's happening is banks today are withdrawing from giving capital to those mezzanine projects, and projects like ours, where there's 25, 30% equity in, have actually become more lucrative to them because they can no longer do mezzanine lending. So their choice of projects has shrunk a lot. So projects from well-known repeat syndicators are actually in demand. But this is a horrible time for new folks. If you're thinking of getting into construction right now, it's a terrible time for you. Because more than ever in the new construction world, the resume, the track record, your ability to raise capital has become critical. Yes. But for those that are already doing it, not much of a difference. On the one side, we've had projects with 2, 3, or 4 month delays because of, you know, city approvals and planning commission slowdowns. And on the other side, we are seeing interest rates that are lower than we have ever underwritten for. Oh, yeah. So there's a balance. And so all in all, I mean, I honestly, I can't say that anything's really changed. Nothing's changed for me to recast my returns. But that is not typical. I believe that there are people in the construction industry that are suffering. We are seeing some reduction in pricing, which is great. We're also seeing that the labor market is no longer as tight as it was before, where you weren't sure that you were going to hit your timeline and you had all this padding built into it. Well, I don't think we need that padding anymore.
Very good. Very good. So you're you're knowledgeable about the whole space. And coming out of COVID, as everybody knows, or a lot of people know, the private equity world has 1.6, 1.7 trillion in dry powder sitting there. What do you see them deploying that capital into coming out of this COVID, or at the right time? Where do you see it deploying that capital into?
I think that there's a real hunger for the capital to be deployed into traditional multifamily. I think that one of the interesting things about COVID was in 2008, multifamily did okay, right? You know, there were some people that had to refinance that got in trouble and lost their properties. But multifamily did okay. Rents dropped by 2 to 3%, depending upon whether it was class A, B, C, but they only dropped for 1 year. Doesn't matter which class it was just 1 year. And then they spiked back up. They didn't go back up, they spiked back up. And then of course we saw this phenomenal cycle from then until the beginning of 2020. So institutional capital has a great history of what happens to multifamily. But this time, they have seen in the first 4 months of the pandemic, they have seen multifamily massively outperform other asset classes, hotels, retail, senior housing, student housing, all are nowhere near the stability of multifamily. Bottom line is this: I am predicting that those people that were paying very low cap rates for these kinds of assets before COVID are going to change their way. Once we get beyond COVID, industrial and multifamily are going to be in one asset class. They're going to be looked at as the must need asset classes. Industrial is a must need because we went from a, retail based economy to an economy where people basically did huge amounts of e-commerce. We've almost doubled the amount of e-commerce in the United States in 6 months. So we've had 5 years of e-commerce growth in 3 months. And obviously, if you're not doing retail, then you need to do warehousing and logistics, right? So industrial is doing really well. Their REITs are doing really well. They've come back all the way. Their stocks went down and went back up. So, I mean, at this point, it's really blue skies for industrial. So bottom line is, here's what I see coming out of COVID. Your question was, what happens when you come out of COVID? Mm-hmm. So I'll just take the liberty of saying, I don't know when we come out of COVID,
correct,
whether it's at the end of this year or it's, a year from now. But when we come out of COVID, multifamily industrial become privileged asset classes, their cap rates compress. Other asset classes are now going to be considered non-privileged or riskier, and their cap rates are going to increase, definitely with almost all forms of retail, except for maybe anchor grocery stores, which have shown some strength, and malls, hotels, basically having to live with higher cap rates for a long time. So I'm in the right asset class, and I'm really feeling good about it. That doesn't mean that the next 12 months are not going to be rough for us. They are.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. So you have a well diverse portfolio, a wealth of knowledge. Let's talk a little bit about what's right behind you, the Multifamily University, and what you've created by giving back your knowledge. Can you touch on a little bit about what you've created through there?
Yeah, I am often dismayed by the amount of the egregious amounts of bullshit that is thrown about in the real estate arena. When I came from tech, I was really taken aback by, everyone using data and numbers to basically just make their point instead of, sharing both sides of the equation. It's perfectly okay to say, here's two sides and this is what I believe in, You're not sharing both sides. Like today, we've talked about the fact that on the long-term basis, that $4 trillion means that multifamily is going to get more expensive. But in the short run, I'm also talking about a 5% decline having already happened, and another 5% to go because of short-term trends. That's a balanced situation. You're giving people both sides of it, and I didn't get enough of that. So I said, I'm going to create a website, which started out with multifamily, and now it's really all things commercial. We even talk about single family when it comes to clusters of single families together. And I said, I'm going to bring in speakers that share my mindset of, let's give people data, let's give them actionable ideas, let's give them toolkits, let's give them specific checklists that they can use and really improve their ability to invest and walk away from gut feel, right? So Multifamily University has two mantras. And the first one is, data beats gut feel by a million miles, right? And the second is, you cannot manage what you cannot measure. So using those two mantras, we built this massive website that we get huge numbers of people now. We do a webinar every week, and we get about between 1,200 and 1,600 people that sign up for each webinar. So altogether, if you total them up, there's about, certainly about 60 or 70,000 registrations. We have 500 people that watch it live because that's the limit of our Zoom license. And then we have about 1,000 people that watch each of them on our YouTube channel. So if you go to YouTube, you'll notice there's about 1,000, people watching each one of those webinars. And there are different types of assets. So we're doing a deep dive into student housing. That's our next town hall. We do these COVID town halls. The theme is, what is the impact on real estate, COVID impact on real estate? And so we just did industrial. We've done crowdfunding with the CEO of Realty Mogul and what that impact is on crowdfunding.
Nice.
And we're doing student housing next. And we intend to do senior housing after that.
Oh.
So the goal is to constantly provide actionable data and let investors make their own decision. Let them get better at deciding for themselves, but making data-based decisions. And that's what Multifamily University is all about. So if you're interested in those kinds of deep dive webinars from thought leaders, check out multifamilyu.com. That's multifamilyu.com. One of the key things there is my trends toolkit, which includes hundreds of pieces of information, reports, and videos on the impact that COVID has had on real estate. You'll see reports on everything, single family, multifamily, student housing, senior housing, industrial, multifamily, you know, basically any asset class and what the impact has been. And we update that toolkit every month.
I mean, you just have to go to the website just to review those. I mean, that right there is so valuable.
The toolkit is powerful. I mean, wow. And the videos, we've got, you know, the CEO of Marcus & Millichap talking about the impact on cap rates. We've got the CEO of Redfin talking about how, you know, suburban flight has been massively accelerated by COVID and what that means for cap rates in the future. Oh, it's, yeah. It's key information that people are really not getting anywhere because they're so busy, you know, wasting their time on Facebook.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's phenomenal information. And I mean, you're the mad scientist. So who else better to post all that stuff and to pour all that great content out there, which is phenomenal. Before we start to wrap things up, a great question I'd love to ask is, what markets are you focused on for multifamily right now and coming up in the next couple of years?
So I have been talking about fast-growing markets. I've been somebody that has been accused of being somebody who chases growth, and my answer is yes, that's what I do. That's why I have properties in 9 different states, because if a state was strong and it got weak, then I walk away. I go to a different state.
Yeah.
Right? I'm always chasing growth, and what I saw was that was massively, ridiculously validated by COVID. COVID has been basically my best friend when it comes to validation of my techniques, because pre-COVID, there were all these places that were booming like Detroit. And I was saying, no, this is the weakest economy in the US. And people are telling me, but people are making more money in Detroit than anywhere else. And the answer is you're right. But there's a time when the music stops. Mm-hmm. And when the music stops, Detroit's going to suffer the most. So when the beauty of the validation was that in April, Forbes came out with a list of top 10 cities best positioned to recover from COVID-19, okay? And 4 of those top 10 are cities we invest in. And there's 2 more that we haven't invested in yet, but they've actually been the cities that we have picked for investors to invest in 2017, 18, 19, and 20.
I love it.
You know, that's public information. Tens of thousands of people have watched that. So that's 6 out of 10. And then they also said, here are the 10 cities worst positioned to recover. We've never purchased an asset in any one of those 10. And several of those, including Detroit, are cities that we've bashed a great deal in our webinars for the last 3 years as being one of those everything looks good thing, you know, economies where everything will fall apart. And it's not just Forbes that's saying this. Go and look at the unemployment rate in Detroit. It's shockingly high. I mean, they're almost at 30% unemployment, where their unemployment was very low before, you know, on a pre-COVID basis. So the economy basically completely fell apart because of COVID. The one city that I can say that I missed on, because I really didn't understand how big of an impact COVID could have in jobs, is we've talked about Vegas in a positive light. And we've said, you know, Vegas suffered in 2008 because they overbuilt, but we're not seeing overbuilding in Vegas. And that is true. And so we were like, yeah, well, thumbs up for Vegas. But the impact on Vegas of, you know, shutting down of the tourism industry has been so catastrophic that I think that the city is suffering as much as is Detroit. So that was one that we missed on. We've been hard on Orlando, but also in the last year, we've been warning people that Orlando is too hot. Mm-hmm. And so Orlando definitely is suffering at this point in time. So anything that's suffering because of the lack of tourism, Miami, Orlando, Vegas, you take those out, but it's really the same cities. Boise is good. Denver, Durham, North Carolina, Raleigh, North Carolina, Provo, Utah, Salt Lake City, Tucson, Arizona. These are all the cities that we've been focused on. Nothing's really changed. You know, Arizona is definitely ahead of other states in that their unemployment rates have fallen the least. So four of the smaller cities in Arizona show up in the top 10 listing. But other than that, not much change.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, those are great markets to be in, and I'll find that link to Forbes and post it down on the show notes below. You just gave us a wealth of knowledge. I always love listening to you speak with the knowledge that you're pouring, the value that you're pouring. Everybody, be sure to check out the multifamilyu.com so you can go ahead and get those forms to find out what's going on in the markets and all the different type of asset classes. Neil, are you ready for our Path to Success round?
I'm ready.
Perfect. Where do you see yourself or your business in the next 5 years?
In 5 years, I see myself doing something different. Unlike most CEOs in the industry, my job is to work myself out of the job. I am mentoring a candidate to take over my job as CEO so I can be chairman. What that new thing will be 5 years from today, I don't know. I'll still be overseeing my portfolio, but probably doing it less hands-on than today, which is 12, 13 hours a day. And I think that is an evolution, that is a process. And for those of you that think that great things can't be achieved that way, I just give you the example of Elon Musk. You know, he was still running PayPal when he invested into Tesla.
Yeah.
And he's currently running SpaceX and Tesla at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. Very much so. What is one thing you do on a daily basis to grow your knowledge?
I use Flipboard on my iPad to do all of my reading, and I use the feature, the thumb down, thumb up feature constantly. And so over time, Flipboard has become massively customized. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of features in these news curation apps that people don't think about using. You can actually go in and say, I like this outlet. I want more information from this outlet. I want more information about real estate. I want more information about COVID, or even about something as obscure as the federal deficit, and it'll give you information. So yeah. I think what people don't do is they don't curate their readings, and I find Flipboard to be a phenomenal way to curate. And if you curate your reading for years and years on end, you end up with a very powerful set of incoming articles that give you a lot of the information that you need to run your business.
Very much so, very much so. Even on my Google app, I have put in there categories of only things I want to know about real estate, what's going on in the market, nothing else. So yeah, that's phenomenal. I love that. What is one advice would you give another real estate entrepreneur that is starting out like how you did, but does not have your knowledge that you do today?
When there's blood in the water, it's a great time to start. I think that this is counterproductive. Most people are afraid of starting during bad times, and they say we missed out the good times. I say to you, that is the worst thing you could ever think for yourself, because here's what you should be saying to yourself, and everyone out there that's new should be saying this. I couldn't have really gotten in the last 3 years because margins were thin, prices were high, and lots of sharks like Neil are around. But today, a lot of the existing companies are going to weaken because their revenue is going to go down. Prices are going to go down. There's going to be more opportunity in the marketplace. The spreads are going to increase. Profit margins are going to get increased. I can't imagine a better time to get into multifamily than today. And I can certainly tell you Feb was not as good of a time to get into multifamily as July is.
Yeah, very much so. And real quick, before we hit to the next question, if you study, and I've studied it here recently, BlackRock, Blackstone, KKR, Apollo Global, these large private equity companies that has over 500 billion assets under management, they all were created during a recession or during a crash in the last 30 years.
Absolutely. I mean, and even in tech, there's so many great companies that were created during those crashes, because the truth is it resonates with investors when you tell it to them. Right? Yeah. So it really resonates with investors.
I love it. I love it. What is one thing you like to do when you're not working?
I like to grow tomatoes. So some of my most popular videos are about growth hacking for tomatoes, everything from using raised beds to LED lighting. And then at the end of that video, which I think has been watched more than any other video I've ever done, I show you how I raise between $500,000 and $1 million in equity from those tomatoes. And the secret is the LED lighting, because when my neighbors are walking all year, they're seeing the blue purple lighting at night, all night, and they're curious. So when I show up at their doorstep with a big bag of tomatoes and a story to tell, they invite me in. And by the end of that conversation, they're investors.
I love it. I love it. What is one word that describes you?
One word that describes me, experiment. I think I am constantly about trying new things, and I have no fear of failing. Because to me, every failure is a stepping stone to success.
And in a person that has your mindset, that is willing to do whatever it takes, and that is really the leader of the pack, willing to try things, there's so many people that are looking at you and like, oh, you're crazy, or no, you're not going to do it. But I see you, and I followed you for the past year, is that you have your blinders on like a racehorse. You are focused on what you want to do and your goals, and you're just going out there and achieving them, and you're not listening to everybody around you that's pointing fingers saying, no, you can, or wow, I don't believe in that. You're just doing what you know best.
I don't think I know best. I do believe that I'm wearing blinders, and it comes with the positives and negatives of wearing those blinders. So there's positives, there's negatives. I've been told 100,000 times to start my own podcast, and I've said, No, I have my own podcast. It's called Other People's Podcast.
I love it.
And I believe it's the most powerful podcast out there.
Very
and I'm spending
so.
Less time on those than I'm spending on my own podcast, and still getting the same visibility with the same group of people.
Yep.
And a lot of people are like, no, you don't truly understand. And I'm like, well, we'll see. My technology is tracking the percentage of my investors that are coming from podcasts, and it's pretty robust.
I love it. I love that. That's a great, great knowledge. That's a great way to see things. What is one book that you would recommend?
The Miracle Morning, not because it's the best book out there, but simply because it allows you to read other books.
Yep.
Any book that gives you time to read other books is more important than any given book.
Yep. I love it. Well, that concludes the show. Thank you so much, Neil, for coming on. How can people reach out to you? We know to go to my multifamilyu.com, but any other way, how can people reach out to you and gain more of the knowledge that you are providing for everybody?
Yeah, I'm pretty available. One is you can just add the word Neil in front, neil@multifamilyu.com. We'll get directly to me. That's N-E-A-L. The other way to reach out to me is even simpler. I happen to be, for better or for worse, the only Neil Bawa on the World Wide Web. So N-E-A-L-B-I-W-A, hit enter. The first couple hundred articles are either my conference presentations or my podcasts or my articles, YouTube videos, those sorts of things. So it's a very easy way for you to start consuming some of our content. And if you like it, we can engage further.
There you go. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it from Neil. That's how you get a hold of him. I hope everyone gained a wealth of knowledge. Real quick, before you stop, take 5 minutes set aside. Hop on Facebook in the search tab. Type in Mindful Multifamily Network, where you can network alongside Neil, myself, and other Mindful Multifamily guests. I hope everyone is staying safe, and I'll talk to you guys later. Thanks, Neil.